Yeah. What we were discussing about the shekel and so on,
yeah,
we said, right.
The
money changes, right.
Yeah.
People were bringing in shekelim from everywhere, but in order to have, you know, a proper one. Now remember, by the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, by then coinage was already beginning to appear, and because we find coins already going back, let's say, to about certainly the 3rd, maybe the 4th, maybe the 5th century prior to the Common Era, okay? So by then they had coins, but, you know, they were still handmade coins, so to speak, and not necessarily stamped out by the government, right? So the money changers had to, if you came in, let's say, with money from Lydia or money from Bactria or whatever it may be, and so you changed it into shekelim, you know, that you could use, okay? You come into Ben-Gurion, you want to make a telephone call, you can't do it with an American card, you need it with an Israeli card, okay? Or...
The token.
No, they did away with tokens. Yeah, no more tokens. Yeah, I have in the house.
Yeah, I
keep it as a memorial,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Imagine there's
right.
Still
that one. Yeah. Okay. All right. So Shmuel's opinion then, as I said, is that when it comes to Parsha Shkolim, this is the passage that is appropriate because the word shkolim, as we see, appears in this particular passage. Okay? God's good. So now getting back to the text of the Gemara, keep this handy because we'll need it as we refer again and again.
So
okay?
The other one says that this is where,
yeah.
This is what we read.
Today, this is what we read.
Oh,
correct.
Right, so we go with the,
We go with Shmuel's opinion,
oh,
right.
Okay.
But as we said, you know, I told you that we go back to a time before these things were 100% formulated, you see, and we see why there was a difference of opinion, too. So we didn't discuss yet the difference of opinion between them, okay? So, yes. Yes, we are right now in the middle of Daf Choftes Amud Beis, okay? Right. Yeah, right. You take, okay, go to the long lines. You see the first long line?
Sure.
Okay. So there, the first one we mentioned, you know, about the money changes and so on, right? And now the next one says, my parshas, the end of that line says, my parshas shekolim. What do we mean by parshas shekolim that we said has to be read? So Rav Amar, right? He said it's Stavitz B'nei Yisrael, Mata Nem is called B'nei Lachmi, right? Ushmuel Amar, he says, no, it's Kisisa. Okay? All right. So now the Gemara says, Bish Lamar, okay, in accordance, Lamando Omar Kisisa, in accordance with the sage who says that it is Kisisa, in this case, of course, happens to be Shmuel, right? So, Haine the Korodei Parsha Shkolim, there's a good reason why it is called Parsha Shkolim. Because if we take a look at the passage, the word shekel is mentioned again and again in this passage, okay? As short as the passage is, but the word shekel is mentioned. So therefore, it is appropriate that on Parsha Shekolim, we should read this. This is in accordance, you know, explaining how Shmuel felt about it. Okay. But of course, Ela Lamanda Omar is called B'ni Lachmi, but in accordance with the opinion which was expressed by Rav, that we read instead as Kobni Lachmi Yishai. So they say, Ahocha, look, in this passage, Mide Shkolim Sivi. Awesome. Tell me, is the word shekel mentioned at all in that passage? And if we take a look again, we'll see that in the passage, you know, the first one that I told you to look at, Zavis Ben Yisrael, the word shekel does not occur in any place, right?
The one from Rav.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the question is, if the word shekel doesn't occur, so why did Rav say then that this is the appropriate passage to read on Parsha Shekolim? You understand?
Because of the Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah. So, the answer is, yeah. Midrash Shekolim Ksivi Hatzav. He says yes. this is not ein, it's really should be read as in. In means yes in Aramaic, okay? It says, Tam omai, for what reason do you say that the appropriate passage for Shkolim should be Tzavis B'nai Yisrael with the sacrifices of Rosh Chodesh and so on? It says, K'derav Tami. This is an opinion in accordance with the opinion of Rav Tami, whose opinion we read earlier. If you'll take a look at the beginning of the third line on the page, right, it says, Rav Tami Omar, Rav Yoshia, Omar Rav Tami, Omar Rav Yoshia. Rav Tami said in the name of Rav Yoshia, it says, the Omar Kro, the reason why proclamation should be made concerning Shkolim, when beginning with Rosh Chodesh Adar, is because he says Zos Olas Chodesh Bechodesho, right? This is the sacrifices. That's the end of the passage that we have that we were talking about. It's written, this is the burnt offering of every month in Bechodesho, and Bechodesho, he said, this means as it becomes renewed, right? So Amra Torah, I'm quoting again from the top, right? Amra Torah, the Torah says, Chadesh b'havei korban mitruma chadasha. It says, you have to start with something new and bring your sacrifices with a new offering. And when is that? It says, and it says, v'kevin v'nisan boi akruvi mitruma chadasha. Okay. And therefore, he says that beginning with the month of Nisan, with Rosh Chodesh Nisan, this time we have to bring in new sacrifices. That is, we have to bring in sacrifices that are paid for with what? With new money that has been collected. So, in other words, when are they collecting the Shkolim for, in order to have sacrifices? They're doing it during the month of Adar, okay? So that it should be all collected and ready, so that when Rosh Chodesh Nisan arrives, then they have enough money to buy brand new animals, and that money is used for that. Okay.
So when they say right. new sacrifices, they mean not on your regular flock. You have to actually.
It has to be not really of the old shkolim that were collected previously, but it has to be with brand new shkolim that are now collected. Okay, because every year, of course, remember in this case we're talking about the year beginning with Nisan, okay? Every year you have to have like brand new shekolim in use in order to purchase the various communal sacrifices that are going to be offered for daily sacrifices, for the additional sacrifices. All that has to come out of new money that was collected, okay?
They don't always have to be the firstborn.
Firstborn is a different story. Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, with firstborn, you have a different ruling. You know, the firstborn animal that belongs to the Kohen, and that is that it's the Kohen, it's sacrificed in the Kohen to eat it. Okay. That's a different story.
So they actually can buy animals for the purpose of this new.
Yeah, of course. Stuff. Right. The one thing is that they have to be in accordance with the age which is specified in the Torah. They have to be with the gender that is specified in the Torah, okay? And, of course, they also have to be free from whatever blemish. You know, they have to be perfect. Tamimim, as it says over there. They have to be 100% perfect, okay?
Is this the Tami, the Kibbi, are these the ones in the morning and the evening?
Yes. But in addition, also for Shabbos, no, the Musafim for Shabbos, the Musafim for Rosh Chodesh, Musafim for Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. All that comes from communal money. Okay.
From communal money.
When I say communal, right? Because this is to distinguish the fact that people can bring their own private sacrifices also, or offer a private sacrifice. Right.
This money that's collected, these shekels, somebody is in charge of.
Yeah, of course, the Kahanim, right? It's a special room in the temple, which was the temple treasury where they kept this money.
Right. It's not like people brought from their own.
No,
house,
right? no, No. That is something else. That's why I say this is a communal sacrifice. It's for the tzibur, as we would say in Hebrew, right? Whereas the others are private. Tzibur versus yachid, if you want the Hebrew terms for it, okay?
So it's not like they're keeping a flock. They specifically buy animals for the sacrifice.
No, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, they had a pen in the Beis HaMikdash where they kept animals. And normally they would keep them for 2-3 days or something like that in order that they should be able to inspect them to make sure that no blemish was there so that they would have a perfect animal in order to do it. Yeah.
Presumably, let's say at the end of Adar,
right,
there were a couple of animals left in the pen.
Right.
They would have to get rid of them some other way. They would not be...
Correct. They would do is that they would sell them off and then use the money in order to buy new animals. Or maybe they would repurchase these. They would repurchase these. But the point is that since they'd already been sold, so if they bought them again now, this was new. Understand? Yeah, so that's what that they did.
Doctor,
yes.
The money that was used for the Sadin reaches in the temple. No, it's the repair.
That's called Berakabayas, right. Yeah.
Oh, Berakabayas?
Berakabayas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, does that also have to be, in other words, you cannot carry over the money from year to year on that? Does that also have to be a contribution?
It doesn't say so. Yeah, that doesn't say. You can build up a fund, I'm sure, and use it from one year to the next. But it's with the sacrifices. That has to be brand new. Okay.
Now, what if there was money, sort of a corollary of Sylvia's, if the animals were not left over, but there was money left over, then what happens to the leftover money?
Well, they have to use it for communal purposes. Whatever it may be. Right.
Right.
Yeah. They would use it for tzedakah, various types of tzedakah, something like that. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, of course. They had to have a treasurer over there. That's he was called a Gizbar. Right. To this day, the word Gizbar is still used in modern Hebrew for a treasurer. Right. Gizbar. Right. Okay, so getting back to where we are now in the text, I read the opinion of Rav Tavi because this is the basis of why Rav said that Tzavos B'nei Yisrael is appropriate for Parsha Shekalim, because what are the Shekalim that are going to be donated beginning Rosh Chodesh Adar to the temple? What are they going to be used? They're going to be used for the new sacrifices beginning in the month of Nisan, okay? The New Year's sacrifices. Okay, so getting back again, okay, so we are now, again, find the long lines, okay? Alright, so, alright, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay? 6, okay. So on the sixth line we see that, you know, in accordance with the opinion that was offered by Rob, I mean, what justification did he have for saying that on Parsha Shekalim we have to read Tzavos B'nei Yisrael? So it says the reason where the word Shekalim doesn't appear at all in the text, but the answer is because of Rav Tavi's opinion that beginning with Rosh Chodesh Nisan you start the new year with new money that has been collected, and therefore it is appropriate to read. Okay, so now we have these two contradictory, if you wish, points of view, Rav's opinion and Shmuel's opinion. Okay. So if that's the case, Elo, I'm in the middle now of that line, Elo Lamando Oma. So however, he says, if we take the opinion that for Parsha Shekalim what is appropriate, it's Kisisa, right? Then in that particular case, Korbanos B'Sivia, where is there a mention over there about Korbanos? What is mentioned only? Shekalim. And what others, what was the use, what did they do with the Shekalim that are mentioned in Parsha Kisisa? Okay? So he says, La'adonim K'sivei. They were used for the sockets into which the boards of the that surrounded the Mishkan they formed like a fence all around the area. They fenced in the area in which the Mishkan was going to be placed.
The actual shkolim?
The shkolim were used, the silver of the shkolim were used in order to make sockets on the bottom. Each of the boards had two legs, okay, and so that they had to fit into the adonim, which were the sockets, okay? They had to fit in, and that way, you know, they had a good footing over there. And then, of course, there were bars and so on that they passed in order to strengthen it, you know. And so
this is the shkolim that they collected for the census.
The shkolim that were, right, according to this opinion, exactly. The shkolim that were collected, and the reading that we read in Parsha Kisiso, were used for the adonim. This it doesn't say specifically here, but we do find it afterwards, where we find Parsha Pekudei, where we have enumeration given of what money was collected and what was expended in the building of the Mishkan. Okay, we take a look at the beginning. Ela Pekudei HaMishkan, there was actually like a report given by Moshe Rabbeinu as to what expenditures were made, how much was collected, what was spent on this, what was spent on that, and so on. So we learn then from there that the silver that was collected, according to Parsha Shkolim over here, that was used for the adonim, for the sockets.
It's
all right.
Right. They had like 1,775 shkolim left over, so they used those to make the silver hooks.
Okay. Because they needed, they used a lot of silver in the construction of the Mishkan. All right. Yes. Yes, Lottie.
It's an interesting word for the sockets. Is there any relationship between that and the word that we normally think of?
I think you're thinking of the word Adon or something like that, Master or Lord or something like that?
Adon.
Yeah, well, that means literally my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Lord.
Well, I don't know. Adonim, right. Adonim, right.
But that's plural.
Yeah, but it's more than one socket.
So why would you think
of it? Oden. Either Eden, or we find it in the Sof Pasuk, or the Slachtus, with the Oden. Yeah.
Well, it's not spelled the same.
Aleph Dalet Nun, yeah.
Oh, it's still spelled the same
it's
way.
It's still in the same letters, yes, but I don't know. I don't know. Okay. I can only tell you that one of them means this and the other one means that. Okay. All right. So, all right. So now, okay. So Adonim, right? It was written only for the Adonim. So, why then do we read this when actually where should the silver be going, the masses of shekel that is being contributed by Jews in the days of the, you know, subsequently after they got out of the wilderness and so on and they established the Beis HaMikdash and so on and still people gave their masses of shekel, what should that be used? So he says, first of all, I'll tell you, take a look in Parsha Kisiso, over there, you know, in that section, even though it's only 5-6 verses, we said. But nevertheless, you take a look. Kidatoni Rav Yosef, Sholosh Trumos Hein, Sholosh Trumos Hein. You take a look. All right, let's take a look again at the passage in the Torah.
Okay.
Kisiso, all right, we said 352. Okay. All right. Okay, then so Zayitnu Khalavir Kudim, right, whoever is in some Martin Septal Master Shekel, Truma Lashem. Okay? That's the end of verse 13, right? Then verse 14, Koloever Kudim Ben Esmish of the Mali attain Truma Sashem. So now the word Truma It's already the second time that we find it, right? And then it says, Hoshila Yaber, the rich man is not to give more. Adalo Yamir, the poor man is not to give less. In other words, they all have to give equally, right? B'masis HaShekel. Losei says, Trumas HaShem, L'chapiyah Nafsho Seichem, right? So this is already the third time, right? Are there any more, does the word Truma appear? No. Okay. Doesn't appear anymore in this passage, okay? All right.
Truma is the offering, right?
Right. It's an offering, correct. So, in other words, the word Truma appears three times. So now, the question is, why is it mentioned three times? So, this is it says, okay. He says, Hen, yeah, Shal Shumas Hen, there are three of them, right? Shel Mizbeach, La Mizbeach. In other words, one Truma refers what? To giving Matzis HaShekel for the offering to be offered on the altar. Okay? All right, so that's one purpose, right? Pardon me?
This is the Mizbeach.
Right.
It's not
No. We're talking about the big mizbeach where they offer the animal sacrifices. No.
Is that for the brass? That's made out of brass.
Well, that's a different story. But we're talking about silver. We're not talking about brass.
So, okay. Now I'm confused. So,
okay.
The altar.
Yeah. There were two altars.
I know. The exterior altar.
The big one.
That was made out of brass or bronze. The interior one was made out of silver.
Originally it was made out of wood, but out of stone, out of wood,
but it
whatever.
Had the brass,
right. And the
network.
Correct.
Okay,
right.
Now these shkolim now, they weren't, help me out here. What were these shkolim going to do in terms of the mizbeach?
Mizbeach?
Mizbeach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The answer is that we're talking now of a period later than that in the desert, okay? In the wilderness, okay?
We're talking later than...
Right. In other words, why does it say three times Truma? So one Truma that the people of Israel had to give, that is the Matzis HaShekel that we're talking about, given contemporaneously, okay? Given in our own time. And that goes for what? That goes for the sacrifices to be offered on the Mizbeach. We're not talking about what Bethel goes into the construction, you understand? We're talking about...
When they say Mizbeach,
right.
We're talking about the Karbanos.
About the Karbanos, exactly. Right, yeah. Right. Right, okay. And then the Shemadonim, Ladonim. The other one is what we mentioned before, that in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and Parsha Kisisa, that silver was put into the making of the sockets, the silver sockets, okay? And then, why does it say Truma the third time? Because here, it showed the Bet HaKabayis. In other words, things that have to do with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, with the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, and so on and so forth. So, people gave money for that as well, okay?
But in each case, it's offering of the Lord, offering of the Lord, offering of the Lord. The Truma, it says it the same way.
Yes, Truma Lashem, of course, absolutely. Right. In any case, you're giving, of course. Right. Okay. Yes. What? Yeah, well, Mar is Aramaic, it's not Hebrew. Adon is Hebrew, right. Yeah, Mar means master, right. Right, yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, okay. Let's take a look for a moment at the Rashi. Okay, this is roughly opposite where we are right now, okay? Well, we could go up a little bit further. Okay. You see where it says Shkolim La'adonim Ksiva, right? That the word Shkolim is written in connection with the Adonim. It says, Hasam there, Kidichsiv, as it is written, V'lokachta eskesef ha-kipurim, right? You are to take this money, which is the service of atonement, V'nasato so, and you are to give it al avodas ohel moed, for the work that was done in the ohel moed, the sanctuary, right? V'hein ashkolim shenasu mehen adadei hamishkan. Okay, so that this offering that we speak about in Kisisa, this was, used for the Adonim of the Mishkan, for the sockets that were there. Kedichsev, as the Pasuk says, the Kes of Pekudei Hoedo, etc., etc. This, I told you, is the beginning of Parsha Pekudei, where we have an accounting given, okay? Yeah. And it's written over there, Vayehi Ma'atz Kikar HaKesef, right? And came to pass that the 100 talents of silver, talent was something like 10,000 shkolim, something like that, okay? So in other words, 100 times the 10, it's a good amount. What is it, a million? Forgive, it was 100,000. And anyway, it was a big sum, okay? I need my calculator. The talents of silver, that was right. 100 times 10,000, right.
1,000?
Huh? 10,000 times 10. Okay. 10,000.
Well,
10,000. It's 100,000.
It's
100,000. Okay.
Million.
Right. All right. So, at any rate, this money was used, Lotsekes, that is the silver was used, Lotsekes, in order to literally to pour out. In other words, they melted it and they put it into the forms that they needed. Okay? That's what they mean by Lotsekes. It's Adi HaKodesh, the sockets for the sanctuary, okay? And then Shalosh Trumo, says Rashi, right? He says, Nem Rusham, right? It's written there, Machzis HaShekel, Trumo LaShem, right? Then Yitain Trumo HaShem, as we pointed out, and then Lotsekes is Trumo HaShem, all right? So that the word Trumo is written three times. All right, so Trumo HaShem, this we already said, Hoysel Adonim. That was given in order for the sockets, right? Usrumas Mizbeah, La Mizbeah, and the Trumo, which is given for the altar, this is for the altar, Liknos Mehen Korbanos Sibur, the Kol HaShana, right? So that money was used in order to buy, communal sacrifices for the entire year, Kedusiv. As it's written, boy, in the passage it says, L'chaper adav shoseichem. It is in order to bring atonement for your souls. Because after all, what is one of the major ideas in the sacrifice? It's that the Rebbeinu Shalom, should forgive us our sins, okay? And then the third one we said is the Berech Habayis. So he says, He lo ha'yiso shovah b'chula. He says, the money that was donated in order for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, or the case of the Mishkan, this was not the same amount for everyone. Elo ish kafidid boso. But rather, each one gave according to his generosity. Shenemar, as it's written, Vayavo ha-noshim al-noshim, the men and the women came, called the divlev, every one of them, willingly offering, making an offering. So, whatever they gave, you understand? Okay, but they didn't give the same stipulated amount that was given in the other two. Okay?
And
yeah.
And women gave, did you just say?
Yeah, right.
Whereas
says
the other one was specifically,
right.
Specifically the male.
Correct.
Thereby hangs mathematical problem.
Yeah.
Follow me on this because I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it's fun. if the men, as we know, and I'm not sure I'm getting this right, but something like 630,000 of
whatever,
623,000.
Figure 600,000. Why?
Okay. Now,
what's a couple of thousand?
Right, exactly. I forget. You don't let me. Now, if each of them gives half a shekel.
Yeah, okay.
That's 300,000 shkolim.
Right.
That leaves you 700,000 short of a million shkolim that you just calculated. Remember all the talents, the karim?
No, but I figured it's for 100,000. I didn't figure it for...
10 times... you had 10,000.
10,000, add another zero and you got 100,000.
100 times 10,000. 10 times 10,000 would be 100,000.
Right.
100 times... 10,000 would be a million.
All right, whatever.
So we're going to play with these numbers. They're like Mitt Romney.
Where did you get that million figure? I mean, where was that coming from?
I'm not sure exactly.
Well, okay. It sounds good. Sounds good. Okay. So we see that was a free will offering that people gave in addition to the regular shkolim that they gave for whatever purpose it was, but they also gave at the same time all kinds of other things that
we're
they gave.
We're talking about during the time of the temple.
The time of the Mishkan. Yeah. Time of the Mishkan even. I mean, the building of the sanctuary.
Yeah. Okay.
This one gave, let's say, wood, and this one gave beaver skins, and this one gave material in order to make the curtains and so on and so forth. You understand?
The Mishkan,
yeah.
About the
tabernacle of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So they would have had all of this stuff that they took out from Egypt to have enough to give?
Yeah. First of all, when they left Egypt, they helped themselves to the Egyptians. Right? It's written by a Nazi was Mitzrayim. In other words, they
exploited.
They exploited the Egyptians.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes,
so they got.
They
it's written on the Torah. Shlo Ishmael, Ishmaelu, and so on and so on. Klais Chesem, Klais Zohar, Smolos, to get from them, literally borrow from them. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Silver vessels, golden vessels, garments, and so on. Sure, they took animals with them, absolutely. Yeah, they took tzon, the bokar, absolutely. Sheep, cattle, yeah, of course.
Then they also picked up a lot of booty.
They picked up at the Red Sea, too. They picked up stuff that the Egyptians had brought with them. You know,
that went out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they depended upon manna.
Yeah.
To eat.
Right. No, so the Rebbe took care of the animals. What shall I tell you?
No, I'm saying,
yeah.
What happened? Where were the animals, even for sacrifices?
I'll tell you one better.
They didn't have it for food. They had to depend on manna for food.
Yes.
Am I going away from the food?
Yeah, but nevertheless,
the
animals still managed to survive in the wilderness and so on.
Yeah,
whatever pasture they found, they found. It's remarkable that even in a place, you know, where pasturage is scarce, but the animals somehow or other manages to try to find whatever they can.
Well, I guess the problem that I'm struggling with this minute is that it never occurred to me that while they had the Mishkan, they were traveling, they were doing sacrifices.
Yes.
And parts of those sacrifices would be used for food.
Yes.
So who would be privileged to eat food that was not manna?
People would offer a sacrifice. They would bring it to the sanctuary, to the Mishkan. It would be slaughtered and the blood sprinkled on the Mizbeach, okay, and then they could eat of it. It's what we call shlomim. In other words, peace offerings.
That,
right.
I guess I have this concept that they had nothing, they had to go out and gather only manna, that was only manna.
Remember when Moshe
the miracle was that manna was there. But nevertheless, they did take flocks with them, and I'll tell you something better. We read this week that about the construction of the Mishkan, and it's written that among things that they used were atzei shittim, right? In other words, in English they try to say acacia trees or something like that, okay? So, you know, the Chachamim asked, where did they get acacia from in the desert? But the answer is that before they left Egypt, they had already provided themselves even with wood for the trip. And obviously they had pack animals, they used donkeys, okay?
Right.
To, you know, as pack animals.
They had to feed the animals as well.
So Baruch Hashem, apparently the animals didn't die. The only thing is, we find, you know, that for example, the people complained to Moshe Rabbeinu, we need water in order to take care of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And also for our cattle as well. They complained, he brought us over here in order to kill us and so on, you know, kill us with thirst and so on. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo helped Moshe Rabbeinu find water.
And how did they get water? How about the time when they complained about not having meat and they were flooded with the...
Because they got tired of the daily manna.
So I guess I'm struggling with what happened.
Right.
Some of them must have been eating meat at some point or another if they had animals.
Yeah, but maybe they didn't do that much. We don't know how much they ate.
What Moshe says when he says to God, he gets frustrated.
He
says, where am I going to find all the meat that I'll eat?
Right.
And then Rashi says, actually, you know, they were herds. This is what they're saying. They did have herds. They had herds of cattle. They had herds of sheep. But, I mean, we're talking how many people? 600,000 men?
Right.
Maybe times three or four. They had meat. They obviously had enough for the sacrifices.
They were sacrificed.
They had probably some. Eat. And don't forget, also, with the Jews came a mixed multitude, so they could eat whatever they wanted. Maybe they ate cattle also, but there weren't enough to provide a daily ration of meat for every Jew
who wished
it. It wasn't enough. They needed, a staple.
Besides which, if you eat the same thing again and again, day in, day out, so you get a little tired of the monotony of it, or something like that. The food is there. They didn't appreciate what they had. What am I going to tell you? Right. All right. Anyway, let's get back over here. Okay.
Why is it that Jews don't always eat chicken? Because the first bird of freedom they eat was quail. We should be having very high level food.
Okay.
We should be having quail eggs.
All right, let's get back again over here. We have a lot of asides tonight. All right, do a couple of more lines and we'll call it a night. Okay, because my throat anyway is very shot tonight. Yeah, of course, no question about it. All right, so now we know that there's justification both for Rav's opinion and for Shmuel's opinion. Justification for Rav's opinion, inasmuch as one of the reasons for Shkolim is in order to purchase the sacrifices for the new year, right, beginning in Nisan. So, therefore, he felt it was appropriate. As far as Shmuel is concerned, the word Shkolim occurs in Kisisa, right, and the fact that the word Truma is repeated three times shows that there were different collections made for different purposes. For the Adonim, for the Bene Kabayis, and, of course, for the Mizbeach, which, as we said, means to buy the various sacrifices to be offered up during the course of the year. Okay. So, Bishlamon, fine, he says, Laman de Omar, if you are in agreement with the opinion which says, Ki Siso, right? That the Skisiso, then he says, Haine de Shoni Hai Rosh Chodesh, Misha'o Rosh Chodeshim. Then this would be a reason wherein this particular Rosh Chodesh Ador, if it's on Shabbos, of course, remember we're talking about, is different from other Rosh Chodeshes which would occur on Shabbos. In what way? As far as the reading is concerned. You understand? In other words, instead of reading what we normally would read on Rosh Chodesh, this is how they're explaining it at this point. Later on we'll see, or Mitzvah Hashem, when we go over, next week and we continue further with this, we'll see that today we know what to read, okay? But remember, we're dealing with a period when it was still a subject of debate as to what is the appropriate one. So, when Shmuel says this, so he says, fine, this is good, because ordinarily for Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, what do we read? Then we read, the passage of the Yom HaShabbos, Rosh HaChechem, the one that goes with Tzavos Bnei Yisrael, okay? But on this Shabbos, he says, it's different in that instead of reading that, what do we read? We read Kisisa. So in this way, it is different, okay? This is in accordance with Shmuel's opinion, okay? Again, this is not our practice today, but this is in accordance with Shmuel's. We'll see later on. I don't think we'll get there tonight, but eventually we'll get there, okay?
Well,
Ella Lamando Omar. But if you take the opinion of Tzavis Kobani Lachmi Yishai, right, that this is the appropriate reading for Parshas Shkolim, so Mashna, so how is this any different from any Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, where what do we read? We read, you know, that passage. Of course, actually, we begin reading from Yom HaShabbos. But it's quite possible that they began from the beginning of the chapter from Tzavos L'Yisrael, just as we do on the weekday in Rosh Chodesh. And, you know, they read all right through Rosh Chodesh. Okay? So, in that case, how is this any different than what we would do in an ordinary one? So he says, okay. He says, Shani, it's different. There is still a difference. Why? The Ilur Rosh Chodoshim Korushiso, they would read six Aliyahs, right? Being Yonah de Yoma, and this would mean in Yonah de Yoma, in this particular case, literally the appropriate passage for the day, which would be what we would call today the Sedra or the Parsha of the day, right? The Shabbos. The Chad, in a Rosh Chodesh, and one for Rosh Chodesh. So in other words, instead of reading only that, right? So this is not an order then. The Ilo Ha'idno, but now, in other words, the Parsha Shkolim, then Kuhu with the Rosh Chodesh. Then the entire reading is not the ordinary Shabbos reading plus a Parsha Rosh Chodesh, which would be an other Rosh Chodesh days which occur on Shabbos, but rather, what would it be? The entire reading would be just for Rosh Chodesh, and forget about what? The Shabbos Nikah Parsha. This is what, how it says. Well, I'm going to stop at this point. Of course, I forgot. Okay, first of all, to identify what night is tonight. It should be the 26th of February in the year 2003. And we are continuing from where we left off the previous session.
Right.
Yeah. So, I want to, again, simply point out what is the problem that we have, and then continue with the explanation of it, providing that my voice is able to hold out tonight. Okay. The Mishnah spoke about the problem of when is Parsha Shkolim. And of course, incidentally, it's this coming Shabbos, you know. It's going to be Parsha Shkolim. And the problem that we have with Parsha Shkolim, according to the Mishnah, is what happens if, for example, it is also the first day of the month of Adar. Okay? Rosh Chodesh Adar. Because the Mishnah says that on the first day of Adar, this is the time that we begin to make public proclamation concerning the Shkolim, right? And concerning also the Kelayim, in other words, the mixtures that grow in the ground, which have to be separated, have to be uprooted, so that you have only the same thing, and there's no mixture taking place over there. All right. So, question is then, what do we read on Parsha Shkolim? This is what the Mishnah wants to know. All right, so it could be either one of two things. Rosh Chodesh might possibly occur in the middle of the week, or Rosh Chodesh could possibly occur on Shabbos. Now, obviously, if it occurs in the middle of the week, then there's a normal procedure that we follow today. But again, you know, in the time of even then, I mean, this we have learned already, that on Rosh Chodesh, in the middle of the week, we have four aliyahs, and what do we read? We read the passage that begins with the words Tzavos B'nei Yisrael, and so on and so forth. And again, what we ought to do is to once more examine it. Parsha Pinchas.
Yeah. 686. is a magic book.
Right. Right on the nose. Okay.
I just went like this and it was my entertainment.
Very good. Except that I'm talking, it should be on 694 that we're on.
Oh, well,
695. Right. Yeah, you're correct. You're correct. The parsha itself begins with that. But specifically, the reading for Rosh Chodesh is on 694. And it's the beginning of chapter 28 over there. I know Rosh Hashanah Moritz, Habanei Swim, Alanim, Skomdimach, Mili Yishai, etc., 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 followed by of Yom HaShabbos, and followed by of Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Earlier this year, we had the problem.
Chapter 28.
Earlier this year, we had a problem with the fact of how many psukim can you divide when we read Tzavos B'nei Yisrael, if you remember. And there's a question. One authority said, you break the pasuk in half so that you would be able to read 2.5 psukim, and the next guy would read 2.5 psukim, and that was right. But they decided the more accepted practice is to to simply repeat one verse, Kofelet.
Some of these three, and then he reads the last verse
with the next two verses. Exactly. It's exactly what we do on Rosh Chodesh on this very day. Okay? And
that's permitted to repeat. That's interesting.
In this particular case, because it's an emergency. Okay? Otherwise, they would never be able to manage. I do want to say that but not of the last posseg. He read, I'll show you what exactly he did. Okay? We all start off when we read the reading on Rosh Chodesh itself in the middle of the week, okay? We read the first three verses, right? Up to Shlaim Layom Alos Hamid. You see that over there, right? And that's the end of the first Aliyah. Now, what we do today is to repeat the last verse, Yomato Lehem, in other words, verse 3, and then we read 4 and 5, okay? And then the third aliyah would be the remainder of this first paragraph, and including also verses 9 and 10 of Yom HaShabbos. And then the fourth aliyah is of Rosh Chodesh, because that's the appropriate reading for Rosh Chodesh. Okay?
Right, exactly.
The Vilna Gaon, his system was to read the first three psukim, that's the first aliyah, just as we do, and then he read up to the end of the first paragraph, in other words, through verse 8, and then he repeated again from verse 6 on. Okay? Well, so that was his system. I saw it once when I was in Yerushalayim, and I davened in a shul, which is called the Beis HaKnesset Shel Agra, in other words, the synagogue of the Gaon of Vilna. Okay? And there they follow the accepted rituals of the Vilna Gaon. So this is the reading for Rosh Chodesh. Now, the problem comes in on Shabbos. What did they do, and what do we do? So what they did dependent upon which authority are we talking about. First of all, we saw that there was a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel as to what? As to what is the appropriate reading for Parsha Shkolim. Rav was of the opinion that the reading for Parsha Shkolim is exactly what we have over here. And what justification did he give for it? He gave the justification that inasmuch as at this particular time they have to begin to gather the shkolim for the new sacrifices that will begin with Rosh Chodesh Nissan, remember?
No.
So that therefore, this, he says, this is Parsha Shkolim. We're reminding people sacrifices have to be made, and we have to pay in order to have the sacrifices on behalf of the community. Okay? So that's according to Rav. But Shmuel had a different opinion. Shmuel says that what we read on Parsha Shkolim is Ki Siso. Okay? Ki Siso. And of course, Ki Siso is actually the Parsha that we'll be reading this Shabbos. Okay? Excuse me, it's the Parsha that we read last Shabbos. Last Shabbos. Okay. My apologies. Still living in the past. Right, right. You're correct. Okay. All right. So, in other words, according to Shmuel, the beginning of the parsha of Kisiso, in other words, the first few verses that we have over there, beginning with verse 11 and ending with verse number 16, this is the reading for Shkolim. Why? Because in it we find that we are expected to give machtzis hashekel b'shekel hakodesh. This was, of course, the command given by Moshe Rabbeinu to the people of Israel that they were to donate. And then we saw, because the word truma, Tumas Hashem and so on, Tumas Hashem, is found three times within these few verses. So therefore, from this, our sages learned, and of course Rashi repeats in his commentary, what we learned in our text, namely that in reality, they gave on three different occasions, all right? One of them, the one that we have over here in Kisiso, is what we call the truma that they gave for the Adonim. In other words, the sockets which were made of silver, into which they put the boards that made like a fence around the tabernacle, so they needed the silver for that particular purpose, okay? So that was the offering that was made over here. But because the word truma is found again, so therefore, from this we find that one would be for the korbanos, right? Various sacrifices on behalf of the people of Israel. And then what was the third one? The third one was for what we call bedek habayis. Now the term bedek habayis actually occurs in the Haftorah that we'll be reading this Shabbos. That, you know, in the story about Yehoyada, the Kohen, and Yoash the king, that they decided that the Beis HaMikdash had to be repaired, and therefore they needed money for the repair of the temple, okay? And so, likewise, what would be the equivalent in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu in the wilderness? The answer is, this would be the free will offering that was given by the people of Israel, all kinds, gold, silver, brass, you know, copper, if you wish, right? And also, you know, that they gave the various skins. They brought in materials that were to be used in order to make the coverings that covered the tent, the Yohel Moed, and so on and so forth, okay? So this was based upon the free will offerings, and not only men gave, but women also gave. They gave extremely generously, as we'll read the Torah reading this week, okay? So, you'll have to forgive me. So the result was that, therefore, the importance of Parsha Shkolim is, that is the appropriate reading for Parsha Shkolim, according to Shmuel, is this passage that we have in Kisiso, because he says this shows that people gave a half shekel and so on and so forth, and this is reminiscent of the fact that just as they gave a half shekel for the korbanos that was put up in the days of old, so likewise we still do it in order to be able to purchase the korbanos, and this the public announcement is made on the 1st of Adar. Okay. So, that being the case, all right, who should we follow? Should we follow Rav, or should we follow Shmuel? They're both important. Great authorities, great rabbis, okay, great teachers of Israel. So, what should we do? Okay. Now, of course, today we have a solution. We make everybody happy. In that, the final solution, as we'll see, is that we take out three Sifrei Torah on this particular Shabbos, and first we'll read the Yod HaYomo, which means the weekly portion, okay? Then we have a second Sefer Torah, in which we read the Rosh Chodesh reading, which in this case happens to be of Yom HaShabbos and Rosh Chodeshechem, in other words, beginning with verse 9 through verse 15, okay? And then in the third one we read Kisisa, okay? So it's gone fine. But remember, that's our solution today, and it is suggested, I mean, that this should be by one of the authorities. But the argument goes back and forth in our text as to if Rav is right, then what do we do? And if Shmuel is right, what do we do? Okay? And not only that, but as you heard, the last thing that we learned last week is that they decided that if, let's say, Rosh Chodesh is on Shabbos, okay, then they say you read six aliyahs in what ordinarily would be the Parsha of the week, and then the seventh aliyah is the special reading. Now, our practice today is that if taka we have to take out three Sifra Torah, then in that case this is exactly what we do. Namely, first the Parsha of the week, then and give six aliyahs for that, then the seventh aliyah would be for Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, and then what do? We read as the Maftir in the third Sefer Torah, we read the Kisisa, okay? In other words, the appropriate reading for Parsha Shekalim, which is fine, but this was not the practice in those days, because you notice they read how many aliyahs? Seven aliyahs. Was there a separate Maftir? No mention of a Maftir over there. Haftorah, yes. In other words, they would read, a Haftorah, but here there's no mention made of a Maftir. So, undoubtedly, the reading, of the Maftir that we have today, this is somewhat a little bit later, apparently, than Rav and Shmuel's time, because it's not mentioned in the controversy over here. Okay?
So
yeah.
Who's the pasuk that introduced the practice that we have today? If you say the compromise practice of the Romani,
it was already hinted at in the Gemara.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. By Rabbi Yitzchak Napoch. Yeah, so we decided that.
So,
right. But,
if you have three, you're reading from
three Sifrei Torah. Right.
That doesn't change the number of aliyahs that you have?
Well, okay. Inasmuch as ordinarily on Shabbos we have seven aliyahs,
right.
And then Maftir is separate, okay? But this is also a controversy that we have. Should Maftir be
one of the
seven, or should it be outside of the seven? And, we decide today that it should be outside of seven. But the Gemara then discusses this problem too, not here, in another place.
Okay.
Right.
So you have something in the Maftir is a separate.
Right, we consider that is correct. Correct.
So that three Torahs?
You have three Torahs, then I say the accepted practice is that you have six aliyahs. You go right to the end of the center of the sixth aliyah, right? Then, as the seventh aliyah, you read the Rosh Chodesh reading, okay? And then, as the Maftir, you read the special one, which in this case happens to be Kisisa. We'll see that there's a similar practice in reference to, let's say,
how much of the Kisisa, if you read the Maftir from the Kisisa, or these opening
we read just the first paragraph, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that is the reading. I mean, after that, it deals with something else. Then it speaks about making a basin so that the Kohanim can wash their hands and their feet before they go to the divine service, Kiyor Nechoshes, and so on and so forth. We take a look at that.
If I understand correctly, then so this Shabbos,
this Shabbos is not Rosh Chodesh.
Okay. If it was a Rosh Chodesh,
that would be what we had to do.
The full
portion
of
Kisisa. No. No, we don't. This week we're reading Vayakhel already.
But you're talking if it were Rosh Chodesh Shkolev.
Yeah.
We're talking about that.
Yeah, correct.
That's when you have this problem, right? this question?
May or may not.
This question. Is it on any Shabbos that it's a Rosh Chodesh we have the same problem? No.
Well, every Shabbos when we have Rosh Chodesh, yeah, our practice is that we read the Sedra and we give seven aliyahs in the Sedra, okay? Yeah. And then, as the Maftar, we read the special reading for Rosh Chodesh, okay?
Right.
But the complication is, you know, if it's both Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, and also at the same time it's Shkolim, you see. This is the problem.
Okay. Yeah. You have the same distribution of Rosh Shabbos.
Yes, it's possible. Exactly. Yeah, that's correct. Because sometimes, in fact, quite often, you'll find that Rosh Chodesh Nisan will be Rosh Chodesh. That will be on Shabbos. So in that case, then that becomes Parshas HaChodesh. So you have to read, again, six aliyahs in the regular Sefer Torah, or regular Parsha, you know, ready, etc. And then number seven would be for Rosh Chodesh, and then the Maftir one would be for Parshas HaChodesh. Okay, so that could happen too. There's a third time when it could happen, and that is Chanukah, because the sixth day of Chanukah is always Rosh Chodesh. The sixth day of Chanukah is always Rosh Chodesh. It's Rosh Chodesh Tevis. Okay, sometimes also the seventh. Most years, by the way, we usually have 2 days for Shkodesh. So it would be the sixth day and the seventh day of Hanukkah. Some years, there's only 1 day for Shkodesh, okay? So, at any rate, there's a possibility that on Rosh Chodesh, Teves, which occurs always during the week of Hanukkah, it might be, again, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, and naturally, the special reading that we read for Chanukah, which is based upon the fact, you know, what we call the Nesiim, that every day a different prince of the tribes of Israel dedicated, gave a gift to the Mishkan, you know, the right. So, I'm finding it hard to talk tonight. Yes.
Do you want me to get you some water or something? I'll try and see if I
can.
No,
no.
No, don't bother, David. I'll stagger through.
That's okay.
No.
The lights on the library.
Pardon me?
The lights are on the library.
The rabbi must have left it. I don't know why.
The door is locked. You can't get in.
The door is locked. I'll have to find a key in the office.
I think I'll close that door.
It is. It's getting chilly now. Right. Of course, you know, the heat goes off at a certain time, and that's it.
It was very warm when we walked in.
Yeah. Yeah, but now we could, we should conserve the heat.
I was going to bring some candy, but it was melting the candy.
Yeah, no.
You're Fleischig.
I'm Fleischig.
Oh.
Yeah. Tuesday night is Fleischig night for me.
Tuesday night
is Wednesday night, both.
That's
added schedule. Right. Oh. Monday, Milchig. Tuesday, Wednesday, Fleischig. Thursday, Milchig.
Wolfig, Fulvis.
Yeah, right.
Fulvis,
right. We would say Bulvis, Bulvis. Did we ever have dairy on Shabbos? It has happened on a few rare occasions when there was, let's say, a big kiddush here in the shul, so that you're pretty much stuffed even by the time you get home, so it doesn't pay to eat the chicken that we had prepared, particularly if the day is short or something like that, as it is in the middle of the winter, you know. Thank you, David. So, occasionally we'll have, but most of the time, of course, we eat the flakes and chops. All right, getting back to our text. Now, as I say, this is the problem. Okay. They're arguing as to who has the right opinion, right? Is it Rav's opinion? Rav votes for Tzavis Ben Israel. Shmuel votes for Kisisa. Okay. And that being the case, we're not finished yet with the controversy. Okay. All right. So we're on the line 12 for the big lines.
Line 12.
Yeah, beginning with the word Hanicha. Yeah. Okay.
It's right in the middle.
No.
Oh, that's the reason.
citizens do
like. Right. No, okay. So, as we saw, one opinion was that if it happened to be Shabbos with Chedesh and Shkolim, according to Rav's opinion, what do we do? Right. So, on this particular case, then all the aliyahs is simply the reading of Rosh Chodesh. All the aliyahs. Why? Because of the fact that Tzavos B'nai Israel, according to Rav, is Shkolim, right? And therefore, the entire reading combines both Chanukah and Rosh Chodesh, which is also part of the reading over here. And that's it. And as I said before, there's no mention over here of a Maftir. So obviously, this is before they started to read Maftirs. You know, it's a separate sefer, or a separate verses, and not counted as part of the seven aliyahs. He counted as part, but they didn't. Okay. So he says, okay, we agree with this, would make sense in accordance with the authority who says, the Seder Parshios Hu Chozer. All right. That he goes back again to reading the regular parshas when? After Parsha Shkolim. But in other words, if Parsha Shkolim is Rish Chedesh also, right? So the entire reading is simply this business of Tavis by Israel through Rish Chedesh, and you call up six people, or you call up seven people, even say, he says. This is opinion, okay? And then that makes sense that the following week they go back to reading the Seder where they left off. You understand? Whatever the Seder would be. Okay. Ela Lamandu Omar. But according to the one who says, no, it's not to the Sedras that you go back, but the Seder Haftoras of Chozer, right? That you go back to reading the normal Haftorah that you would read on a particular Shabbos, right? You go back to it. Ufasha, so the Yom HaKarinon, and what do we do before we get back to the Haftorah? We have to read the regular Parsha of the day, right? So, my Shoni, so how is it different? So he says, well, I'll tell you, Shani, it's still, there's a difference. Why? The either Roshe Chodoshim, Koru Shiso, okay, the Inyona de Yomo, he says, well, so then they would read, you know, in the weekly Sedra, six aliyahs, the Chad Kori by Rosh Chodesh, and then he would read, you know, the Tzavos by Israel, and so on and so forth, as the seventh aliyah, okay? Which contains, of course, the reference to Rosh Chodesh. The Yiloh Ha'idnon. Whereas now, he says, we have a different business. Since in the Shkolim, he says that ordinarily, right, we would read six aliyahs in the Parsha of the week, and we would read as number seven of Rosh Chodeshim, right? Shabbos from Rosh Chodeshim. But now, if it's also Parsha Shkolim, so this is what we should do according to this opinion. Korot Losa Binyan and Yom. Read the first three aliyahs in the weekly Parsha, right? Viar Bo, Koru Bin Rosh Chodesh. And then the fourth aliyah is the Rosh Chodesh reading. And then, of course, what would be then the rest of them? I have to assume that it would be, you know, let's say Kisiso or something like that. But I don't have to tell you, there are all kinds of, it's a very awkward opinion, okay? And certainly we don't follow it. So, then they ask a conflicting opinion that was voiced elsewhere, the Baraisa, we say. Okay, Maisme. So they question this by quoting a Baraisa. The Baraisa. Remember, Baraisa, I told you a long time ago that the Baraisas were...
Oh, no, I mean, where are we here?
Just where it says Reish Chet. You see Reish...
Yeah, Mesve Rosh Chodesh Adar. Okay?
You see that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mesve Rosh Chodesh Adar Shacholiyas B'Shabbos. Okay?
Rosh Chodesh
Adar. Right. Okay. So, there's a different opinion. Namely, that Rosh Chodesh Adar that if it happens to be the first day of Adar, Shechol Yis B'Shabbos, and it's also on Shabbos, so Korim B'Parsha Shkolin, right? We have to read Parsha Shkolin. U'Maftirim B'Ho Yoda HaKohen, and we read as our Haftorah, the passage, you know, which deals with Yehoyada the high priest and Yoash the king and how they decided to repair the Beis HaMikdash, so that the money that was collected went for that particular purpose, for as what we call Berech HaBayis, for the repairing of the house of God. And in general, Berech HaBayis later became, as we saw in our discussion the past couple of weeks, that Berech HaBayis could mean anything that you give in order to, you donate to the Beis HaMikdash, not specifically for the Korbanos, but for any other purpose. So Bishlam Olam and Omar, in accordance with the opinion that says Kisisa, you know, that the correct reading for Parsha Shkolim is Kisisa. So Hainu the Maftim Yehudi Al Kohen. So that makes sense why they read as the Haftorah the story about Yehoyada the priest, right? The Domele, because there is a similarity between Kisisa and between the Haftorah that begins with Yehoyada Kohen. Dichsiv, as we find written in the Haftorah, it's written Kesef Nafshos Erko. Okay? In other words, people gave money as an atonement, right, for their souls. Okay. And of course, what does Kisisa say? It says that we give the Shkolim the Chaper Nafshos Eichem of the Hashem, right? So that, in other words, the idea of Kapora, giving a donation, serves in order to bring about forgiveness by God for the sins that we commit with our souls. Okay? Marty, do you have a copy of the page? Okay. Yeah. Ella Labanda Omar. But in accordance with the opinion which says, "Es kovani lachmi," that you know, the correct reading for Shkolim is kovani lachmi le Yishai, me dummy. What comparison is there between that and between what is told about in Yehoyada HaKohen? So he says, "Dummy, yeah, I can find a comparison, and this comparison is based kidarav tavi, in accordance with the opinion that was quoted by Rav Tavi, which we find higher up in the page. If you take a look, beginning on the third line over there, it says Rav Tavi Omar Rav Yosha, he said the name of Yoshia, that what Amakra Zois Ilas Chodesh Bechotcho, namely that because on Rosh Chodesh Nisan we have to bring the Shkolim because we start a brand new cycle. So therefore, he says, okay, so just as they gave Gelt in the time of Yehoyada HaKohen, you understand, in order to work on the temple. So likewise, Shkolin is a donation in order to bring Korbanos, that is to buy Korbanos for the service of, in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Mesmer, another objection is raised. You can see they like to object because they're reasoning out all these things.
Why is there a parallel between Berech HaBayit and the Korbanon the Beit Mikdash? Wouldn't it be, we learned just now from you, between Berech HaBayit and the Trumot of the Mishkan?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I gave you the correct explanation. But he's looking for something that's a parallel, something that's similar. So similarly, all right. One of them is giving, you know, to the Mishkan, and the other one is giving
to the
Korbanos, right. Okay. Mesmer. Okay. You want to be a bit doctic. All right. We simply say makes faith, that's all. So a further objection. Okay. Cholios befarsha hasmucha lo beim ufoneh beim acharehu korin osa v'koflin osa. This is a very strange opinion, but as you can see, they're battling back and forth. Okay. Why is it a strange opinion? Because what he's saying over here is whether Rosh Chodesh Adar occurs, and it occurs in the middle of the week, right? If Rosh Chodesh Adar occurs in the middle of the week, okay, then it makes no difference. We want to introduce the concept that Shabbos Shkolim is coming, and so therefore we read it on the Shabbos prior to Rosh Chodesh, which is what we're doing this coming Shabbos, incidentally. And then he says, and then the following Shabbos, you read it over again.
Yeah,
which we don't do.
Read it over again.
Read it over again. That's what Kofla means. Read it over a second time. Okay. So this is what he's saying. In other words, you do it, you know, before, and you do it
and
after.
Read it again.
Right. Kohen Oso, you read it, the Kofen Oso, and you read it a second time,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is, as I said, this is a revolutionary idea, okay? So, Bishlamor, if you go in the Kohen's Lamando Omar, who says, Ki Sisa, you know, so he says, Haidin Misrami Bahu Zimna. Yeah, you know, if you're talking about that, we accept the fact that what? That the reading for Shkolim should be Kisiso. So it happens sometimes, Taka, that what? That just about the same time we're also reading a similar passage. In other words, we're reading either, let's say, Tetzaveh, you understand?
Yeah.
Or maybe we're reading like this week, Vayakel, where it's, you know, one is in close proximity to the other. So if that's the case, then in other words, you'll hear it once on one Shabbos, and then you'll hear it again the following Shabbos. This is particularly true. He's thinking in terms of the Tzavah. That if you read the Tzavah, what is the ending? You know, the Tzavah ends, and then the next reading is Kisisos Ben Yisrael, and so on and so forth. So that, in other words, we'll be reading it Parsha Tzavah, and we'll be reading Shkolim, right? And then the following Shabbos, what is the center going to be reading? Kisisa. So in other words, we're going to hear this passage, Kisisa, how many times?
Twice.
You got the picture? The first time would be Parsha Tetzaveh.
Yeah.
And that would be Shkolim.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the following week, we will be reading Kisisa. So since we're reading Kisisa, because Tetzaveh is Shabbos Shkolim, you understand? So you'll have that way the chance to hear twice.
Yeah,
first the Shkolim and then as part of the center.
Wait, that's assuming
that's assuming, correct.
Right, okay.
Right.
So basically,
that's not our
yeah,
idea.
Right.
Hearing that pasuk, is that right?
So yeah, right.
That's the whole idea. What has nothing to do with the Aftorah. Because they didn't read the Aftorah those days.
Haftorahs they did read, according to this. They did read Haftorahs. They didn't have a separate Mafter reading. Let me define now what we mean by Mafter. You know, normally people say, Mafter means that you do the Haftorah, which is correct, but our system of Mafter is different from what was in those days, because as we see on this page, obviously, they called up seven people, and as we said, on a special Shabbos, like, you know, let's say when it is Parsha Shkolim, so they would have six aliyahs from the center, right? And then the seventh aliyah would be Shkolim, Kisisa, okay? That's the opinion in those days, okay? But is there a mention made of taking out a separate Sefer Torah in order to read it? We'll have to know. It's not mentioned over here, okay? This already is a somewhat later opinion, as we'll see. It's in the Gemara, too. We'll come across it.
The terminology, Parsha Shkolim, gives you the impression that there is a Parsha Shkolim, in the sense that
is a special Shabbos, right?
Yeah, only that it's a special Shabbos.
Okay. Maftir means the person who makes a conclusion to something in this case. Of course, today we have Achrayed and so on and so forth, but
they read the last sentence of the
All right. So what we do on an ordinary Shabbos, exactly. I mean, we read the last few verses that we found, in the Parsha, right?
They go on to read
So that the person,
the word, the word itself,
right.
He actually means one who causes to depart.
Right, or something like that, right.
But he puts here
the person who, right, right. So, the person who is the maftir in the Torah, in other words, he's also given the haftorah to read. And haftorah is always taken from what we call the prophetic writings. Okay? Could be from a prophet, it could be from anywhere from Yahushua, Sefer Yahushua, through the end of, not only Melachim Beis, but also all the various prophets that we have. What we never use as the Haftorah is what we call Ksuvim. In other words, we never read, let's say, the book of Psalms or the book of Proverbs or anything like that as a Haftorah. No, we don't. We study it, but we don't use it as Haftorah. Okay? Yes.
But Lahit Patir can also be to retire? Sorry? To quit, to retire?
Fight for a job.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
How would you say retire?
Yeah, you might say Lehit Pater. And then, of course, Lehit Pater means that you resign.
Yeah,
Pater, of course. Yeah, Pater. Yeah, it's the same.
So wait,
same
Lehit idea. Pater is to resign. So how does he retire?
Yeah, you might say Niftar or something like that. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's used. Right. Today they say the Kapil Pensia. Capel Pensia.
Pass away is
Niftar.
Yeah, that, correct.
Niftar
is used in that sense too, right?
Niftar.
Yeah, we say Yeshua is Niftar Gavard, right?
No, the other word with Kapel, with a Kapel. What's the word?
What?
No,
No, Kapar is something else.
After Niftar
was
Pagar. All right.
Expired.
Yeah. Pagar is,
Right.
It's also
the
Hebrew word, right? Right. Pagar itself is, right. Means, a dead body, a corpse. That's what Pagar means. Yeah.
We need our.
But, Yiddish,
gepagert.
But Gestorben is nice, okay? Nifter is even nicer, but Gepagert already is a little bit more on the vulgar side,
or an enemy, somebody.
Right.
When you said Nifter, what was the word? Gavoy? What was the
word? Which word? What?
When you used the Yiddish expression, you said Nifter, which is...
Yeah.
Now, what was the word it used afterward? I didn't hear
Gestorben.
You guys know this, right? All I know how to say is Hafnishka Chayim. What is Gestorben is what?
Gestorben is for the word. Starben means to die. So Gestorben.
Nifter Gestorben.
Died.
Right. Starben,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's German, of course. Right.
I have to tell you this story. Should I waste everybody's time? I'll waste time after.
Okay.
A very funny story.
All right. Let's try to do at least a few more lines before my voice expires.
Supposed to have to see him tonight. He says,
He knows that we're near the end of the Masechta, right?
I think he's pushing us.
I told him, that when we complete this, we normally have a siyum and we invite the rabbi to come and so on and so forth. But he was more interested, doesn't have time, he says, to learn now for siyum Erev Pesach.
Oh, for Erev Pesach.
So I said, okay, I would make a siyum. I said I would learn. I'm learning anyway.
So what we do, you're going to do it as the end?
I don't know whether... That depends. I may not. You know, I don't want to drag it out, but I'm learning Shavuos anyway right now. So, I'll save the end of Shavuos for...
The
Daf Yomi, right. Yeah. All right, so... Not finished yet. We're not finished yet. Okay, all right. So, we saw that one opinion is that you read Kisisa actually on two Shabbosim, one prior to Rish Chodesh, and the other one on the Shabbos after Rish Chodesh, right?
When you actually read the Nisedra.
Yeah, so he says this pocket could happen when you're reading Kisisa. So, you know, it might be, let's say, for example, the Tzava followed by Kisisa or something like that. Okay? Fine. Very good. Or it could also possibly happen, he doesn't mention it over here, but let's say it might also be, let's say, that we read Parsha Shkolim, you know, on Kisisa. I don't mean Parsha Shkolim, I mean we read the Sedra Kisisa, and then maybe to Vayakhel, as we have it this year, then you're going to read again Kisisa over again. So that way you will be hearing it twice. Right.
Because this is Shabbos Shkolim.
Correct. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility. Okay. But now they raise an interesting question. let's see, where were we? But if you follow the opinion who said, and of course you remember this was Rav's opinion, that what? Parsha Shkolim is Tzav es B'nai Yisrael, right? It's called B'nai Lachmi B'nai Yishai, and so on and so forth. You know, the reading that we have for the daily sacrifice on Mishchedesh and so on. Mim Esran Bahu Simno. Is it possible that that will be read at the same time as, let's say, Kisisa? It's an impossibility, they say. Why? Because when does Kisisa occur? We read it at this time of the year, you know, sometime either towards the end of towards the end of Shvat or an Adar or something like that. That's when we read it. Okay, of course, this year being a leap year, so... now we're separating by Yakam Pekudas, the first of the double Parshas. Okay. But the point is, at this time of the year, it could be quite possible to do it. But how is it possible to have Tzavos B'nai Yisrael, which is, after all, in Parsha Pinchas? Remember, we looked it up and we saw it over there. And that is in the fourth book of the Bible, and usually when is it read? It's read sometime, let's say, around Tammuz, right? It's approaching the month of Av, you know, the end of Tammuz, approaching Av, is normally when we read it, right? So how could we have that there's going to be a doubling of Kisisa under those circumstances? Can't happen. So they scratch their head, and they try to find out, when is there a rare possibility that it might happen? That they'll be reading Kisiso instead. So he says, Livnei Ma'arova, you know, the people who live in Eretz Yisrael, the Maskil Lida Oraisa B'tlos Shonin. It might possibly happen that... you would be having, you know, the Korban Ilach Mili Yishai read about the same time as what? It's the same time that we're reading Kisisa. Why? Because in Eretz Yisrael, the custom was to divide the Torah and read it over a period of 3 years. And as I told you, this 3-year cycle that they have, actually the Reform started. The conservatives, and many, most of the conservative congregations do it. That, but it's a fake 3-year cycle, simply because the original 3-year cycle, they always would begin where they left off the previous week. So in other words, let's say Bereshis has 12 sedras, the way we read it today, okay? They maybe spread it over 24, 36, or something like that, you understand? Because they split it up. But once they finished Sefer Bereshis, then they went to Sefer Shmos and continued the same way, and so on, so that eventually, during the course of 3 years, they had read the entire Torah. But not this business where you read a few psukim here, and then next year you read a few psukim here, and something like that. I mean, that is not the real system. Right, right.
I'm telling you, I saw you read it from year to year. They would always reread. They forget where they did it the year before, so they reread.
Right.
Listen, Doctor, excuse me, I'm a little confused. How does the fact that they read the Torah over 3 years get Tisa close to Sa'?
No. All that he... You know, you're asking a very good question. But the point is that I think actually we have to interpret it a little differently.
Okay.
We would have to say that maybe the parsha, you know, Tzavitz B'nai Yisrael and so on, as the regular reading of Shabbos, would occur not in the summer the way it does with us, but it might possibly occur at this time, in other words, around Rosh Chodesh Adar.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
This is the only way in which we can say, I mean, that makes sense according to this opinion, okay? But needless to say, we don't follow this opinion today.
What's the purpose of this whole discussion? I don't understand.
The purpose of the whole discussion, the whole thing is based upon the fact that they were, at this particular moment in Jewish history, the rabbinical authorities were a little confused as to what is the proper reading, how much to read, and so on. And that was the point. You know, we work from the point of view of hindsight. You know, we know what the law is today. But they were first trying to work it out to find out, you know, how to arrive at it.
Did we discover what the connection was with Megillah altogether?
With Megillah?
Yeah, how come
okay.
I forget where the beginning was.
Yeah.
Of this particular discussion.
This chapter, the fourth chapter over here, is called B'nai Ho'ir. Okay, and it deals with the fact that you know, you have sanctity, what's holy, what's less holy, and so on. You can go up the scale, down the scale. What do you do with the shul, and so on and so forth. Okay. All right. So we had all that, and now they come to the fact, they come back more, you know, to the fact that, hey, wait a minute, we're supposed to be talking about Megillah, and Megillah, when do we read Megillah? In the month of Adar, right? So, the month of Adar also...